across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
This is Tim and Liz.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
It is Veganuary. I'm not sure where our guest sits on this, because it is a little bit of a monthly craze and then everyone sort of moves on with their lives. But Louise is here from STEM and Glory. Good morning.
Good morning.
How do you feel about this? I mean, I guess you can look at it in two ways. One is that it's raising awareness, but in the other hand, it's a bit of a, once January's over, then people kind of move on.
Yeah, I think it's really good, actually. I mean, year on year, it's sort of gaining traction as well. And I think, actually, Veganuary Pledge, you can take at any time of the year now. They just sort of, after January, they just sort of roll it on.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I've seen some really big name celebrities sort of jumping on board this year and saying they're going to do it more than usual, I would say, this year. So, yeah, I think it's a good thing.
I don't have statistics to hand, but it is definitely, I mean, you might do. It's definitely on the increase of people changing their diets, isn't it?
I think it's massive now. I think, you know, not many people can sort of find many reasons for being sort of meat eaters 7 days a week anymore. I think, you know, the jury's out on whether we'll all end up completely 100% plant-based, but definitely I think almost everybody is cutting back on meat.
Yeah, and it's a lot more easier to do this now, isn't it? Because there's a lot more options out there in the supermarkets and the shops. You can buy meals that are already pre-prepared for you. The chillers and the shelves in the supermarkets are filled with lots of ideas and pre-made things now. So even if you're not a very good cook, you've really got no excuse.
That's it, isn't it? You've really got no excuse now. I mean, you know, the whole supermarket, yeah, they're absolutely filled with... I mean, you've got, like, in the beginning, it was plant-based creators creating the sort of fake meat products, but now you've got some big players jumping on now. And I think when you've got the meat producers producing predominantly non-meat products, then that'll be an absolute game changer. It's interesting to see how the market's shifting. Unfortunately, probably what will happen at that point was some of the smaller players will get shifted out. So the people who start the movement, often the ones who kind of end up not dominating the markets. But in terms of, if you look at overall the movement of sort of plant-based movement, then it is a good thing that the bigger players get involved, I think.
Yeah.
I also think it's quite good that you can shop locally for your fruit and veg. I mean, obviously, having more veg is hopefully the end game, as well as obviously lots of beans and lentils and things. But it's not just a case of eating, like we were saying, chips and pasta and bread and, you know, I mean, but if you're vegetables, obviously you've got to be careful that you're buying locally grown produce and you're not, you know, maybe adding to climate change in other ways by, you know, adding to the air miles or, I don't know, the way things are grown.
It's complicated, isn't it? I mean, the thing is, what we're just talking about, the supermarket shelves being full of product, I mean, essentially they're all like commercially sort of produced fake products, aren't they? And there is an environmental cost far greater with products like that than there are with buying natural vegetables. So anything which is fake is going to have a higher carbon footprint than something which is natural. Even it's complicated even with vegetables. You know, it's not the case that per se imported vegetables are bad. You know, things that are forced grown in this country, you know, for example, tomatoes grown in polytunnels in the winter in this country have a higher carbon footprint than stuff that's imported from a warmer country.
Oh, really?
So it's really, really complicated. My advice is kind of try and keep it as simple as possible. You know, we none of us can know the full impact of our actions. However, we can minimise them sort of gradually, bit by bit, by being mindful, being more considerate, and trying to eat natural products as far as possible and trying to avoid processed. Most vegan, in inverted commas, you can't see me doing inverted commas, but most vegan products like fake meat, fake sausages, all of those, they're commercially produced and they're probably less good than eating natural products like lentils, kind of a bit traditional sort of vegan, but they are actually natural. But I mean, most things like beans and lentils, they're all imported and always have been as well. That doesn't necessarily mean they have a high carbon footprint, because they don't. They're all freighted by sea, for example.
Yeah.
You know, something like asparagus, avocados, the jury's out on at the moment on there. It's like we've kind of minimised our use of avocados in the restaurants because, I don't know, I don't know for sure about how bad they are, but there's a lot of talk about it at the moment.
The water consumption
too. Yeah. And I mean, even like with soya as well, it's complicated, you know. You could sort of just live and sit and eat nothing.
Yeah. Exactly, you could do.
You have to eat.
And you have to live, exactly.
I mean, I would love to come to your restaurant, especially this month. I think it will give me some great inspiration. But give us an idea of what is on the menu.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, the one that was in the Cambridge Independent this week, which is our legendary lasagna, it's our bestseller at both sites, actually. It's basically, and it's gluten-free. It's not even got actual lasagna sheets in it either, which sounds a bit weird. But so we use celeriac sheets, so very finely sliced celeriac, which is roasted. And we use that as the lasagna sheets. And then it's layered with kind of rich tomato sauce, vegetables. And then the secret ingredient is the cashew bechamel. So it's bechamel made with cashew nuts. We use a lot of things like, as in the paper as well, Enjuvita flakes, which give this kind of cheesy flavour. Mm. And yeah, it's just delicious. And it is our most popular dish, both sites, by a long way, actually.
Yeah, because Louise, you're saying you've opened a restaurant in London.
Yeah, we opened in London January last year now, so we're just coming up to our first birthday on the 14th of January. We've just agreed terms just before Christmas on a second site in London, which is going to be super exciting. We've got another retail partnership coming up also in London for this year as well. So, yeah, we're going for it.
I'm interested in the way that this has all grown for you, because I remember when you opened up in Cambridge a couple of years ago, you moved to the site, is it, around Mitcham's Corner?
Yeah, exactly.
And you've been operating before that elsewhere, hadn't you?
I guess I've been playing with it for a while, for years, really. I had a yoga business as well. And within that, we had a kind of vegan cafe right from the beginning. It was kind of, you know, it was small. It was just serving the sort of yoga community. And then we got a bigger studio. We opened it slightly bigger. We were cooking for people who were coming for events quite a lot. So it was sort of bubbling up, I suppose. And I think really, in my mind, I've had this idea in my head for quite a long time before that.
But you're a bit of a visionary in that sense, I guess, because you've been doing
before
it
for your time,
and now everyone's on this, and you're obviously, it's expanding and it's doing well for business.
Well, I guess so. I mean, it wasn't really premeditated, I suppose. It was sort of one of those things that I felt compelled to do, you know. It was when the opportunity presented to open it, it was just right place, right time, really. But the speed that it took off, that did kind of take me by surprise, and that's what made me kind of realise that it was the right time for it. But you know, it's we were talking before we came on air about, you know, that there's a lot of interest in the plant-based space at the moment. I'm off to Holland next month to pitch at a restaurant investment conference, so they've invited us to go and pitch there. So, you know, everyone's kind of looking for the unicorn, well, just generally in business, but especially within the vegan space at the moment. And obviously I very much hope that's going to be us. But it'd be interesting to see, you know, when we start to see vegan brands alongside sort of typical restaurant brands on the high street. It'll be interesting to see how that develops, really, whether it's us, whether it's someone else, or whether it's us and someone else, which is what I kind of hope, because obviously I'm on a bit of a vegan mission. But yeah, watch this space, I suppose. It'd be interesting to see how the next sort of 2 to 3 years go.
I love it. We can say it all started in Cambridge.
Yeah.
Everything starts in Cambridge. Do you not know that?
A lot of things do. Do you notice a big difference between Cambridge and London in the terms of your customer base or what sells?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, London, I mean, it's kind of, it's tempting just to sort of stay in London in a way, because London, you know, first of all, everyone travels by public transport. So everybody drinks alcohol, which whether you like it or not is good for business, obviously. And people, there's a higher spend per head in London. You know, it's good. Cambridge is quite different. No one, I'm not trying to be derogatory to people in Cambridge, because obviously I'm from Cambridge, but no one goes out after 9 o'clock in the week in Cambridge. But, you know, last sitting, you get one sitting in the evening in Cambridge. Yeah. That's about it, really. Yeah. So it's quite a different market. So it's, yeah, but I mean, obviously people do make it work in Cambridge as well. And Cambridge is a fast growing town as well. We're looking for a bigger place in Cambridge, actually. That's
right.
So trying to find that right place, which is a little bit similar to what we have in London.
You're looking for somewhere that's a bit more in the city centre?
In the city centre, but you've kind of got two things. I mean, where we are in London, it's very much serving the business community. And, you know, in terms of the environmental sustainable sort of message, businesses are some very big companies in London, for example, that have that as part of their agenda. So it's an obvious choice for them to dine with us, for example. So trying to find that community in Cambridge as well. So not quite sure where city centre, or can you've got a lot of work going on around the station, for example. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of big business community around there now. Mm. So
yeah, we cycled around there, didn't we, on New Year's Eve. It's a really interesting little development.
It's
happening.
Growing quite fast around there.
Yeah,
I mean, Cambridge is absolutely booming. So I'd like to think that Cambridge, you know, because where we are, Cambridge at the moment, quite small, whereas in London we've got quite a big place. I'd like to think we could support a big place in Cambridge as well.
Yeah.
So do you do breakfast, lunch, that kind of thing, or is it more of a sit-down meal in the evenings?
I mean, Cambridge, we have kind of fast-paced, you know, fast turnover lunch and more of a sit-down in the evening. London is much more dynamic. dining in. It's interesting where we're going to be opening this year in London is a very, very high footfall destination. So there we'll have a fast turnover lunch as well. I think, you know, in hospitality, you have to adapt to whatever wherever you are, really. In Cambridge, we have a brunch offering at the weekends, which is pretty popular. So within the brand, we have brunch, breakfast brunch, lunch and evening dining, fast lunch. So out of those, you just pick the ones that fit the space where you are.
Hmm. There's not a deli side of it as such where people
not yet.
No.
You never know. Yeah, I mean, where we're opening up later this year, there's definitely a much more kind of grab and go option.
So what do you think, for example, for Greg's doing their, what is it, the fake baked steak thing? I don't know. And
vegan sausage roll, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting, isn't it? How amazing that was for them this year. What a complete game changer. Mm. And, you know, I'm totally pro all of it, really. I mean, my personal choices aside, you know, the more noise there is about veganism, the better. And I think, you know, you'll get people, for example, there's the Kentucky Fried Chicken thing, isn't there? I mean, personally speaking, of course, I wouldn't ever eat from a Kentucky Fried Chicken, but I think if you've got people who eat Kentucky Fried Chicken now deciding to take the plant-based option when they go into Kentucky Fried Chicken, I think that's a good thing. And yeah, I think, you know, the market will adapt according to the demand, and the more demand there is, the less meat there is, and that alone will lower the kind of carbon footprint of people's eating choices.
So obviously, Louise, you are vegan for a reason, probably lots of reasons, but you became vegan how long ago, roughly?
Well, 35 years was when I had my aha moment with it.
And what was it that kind of changed you or made you think, yeah, I'm going to go from vegetarian to vegan?
Well, it was from meeting, I was a teenager actually, so obviously I didn't get brought up vegetarian. Honestly, it was meeting a Krishna devotee and being introduced to the idea of compassionate eating. I'd never even considered it before, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. It was literally like that. I realised at that point that my personal view is that we should, if we can avoid it, we should not eat animals, and that was it. I gave up eating meat on the spot, and I never looked back. So, yeah, this is kind of thing, is like people ask now, there's this question, are you vegan for the animals or vegan for the environment? But I am vegan for the animals, yeah, 100%. However, there are, you know, increasingly compelling environmental messages to health messages as well. So,
yeah, talk us through the health benefits, because you obviously feel better for it.
Yeah.
What do you think? How do you think it gives you an advantage or slightly?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you can be a very unhealthy vegan. The very first vegan I ever met, actually, when I was very young, was living on a diet of potato crisps. So, and I think actually, you know, as a young vegan, when you're eating out and stuff, you're pretty much forced to eat, you know, really unhealthy food.
Yeah.
Like, exactly, potato crisps and sort of white bread. So, you know, I don't think it's as simple as saying being vegan means you're healthier. I think being vegan, you're more likely to seek healthier choices, and hopefully by being vegan you're probably eating more vegetables, but it's not as simple as saying being vegan is going to be more healthy. And certainly with all these fake meat products, I mean, you know, in terms of what's natural and good, a fake meat product is actually less natural and good than a meat product, if you really sort of dissect it like that. So my view is that if you're eating foods that are predominantly made of vegetables, preferably home cooked, or, you know, as little processing as possible, that is going to be the healthiest of all. I think, generally speaking, if you avoid processed foods, vegan food is easy to digest. And yeah, I mean, there's a whole load of things that go with that. You know, I mean, I'm pro avoiding refined carbohydrates as much as possible. You know, these things have an impact on health far greater than just being vegan.
Do you think we might see, talking about fake meat products, might see those sort of going by the wayside in the future? Because that was where to me, on the outside, it started with people like Linda McCartney and vegetarian things like that. And then the fake meat products came along with the corn. And personally, I don't understand, as somebody that eats a lot of meat, what the appeal is to somebody eating fake meat products if you're vegetarian or vegan. Because surely if you're against eating meat, then why would you want to eat something that is shaped like a sausage or shaped like a burger? I don't get that personally. But there's a lot more things now on offer that means you don't even have to even go down that avenue.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe there wasn't in the past, and that was your go-to thing if you wanted to be vegetarian or vegan, was eat the fake meat. Now there's other things, you don't even have to go touch those things.
Yeah, that's an interesting question as well. I mean, Linda McCartney's been around for a long time, and I've always consumed Linda McCartney products. I mean, Linda McCartney is really great. I think those products, they're not really like meat, if I'm completely honest. The corn stuff, now you can get corn vegan stuff, is a bit more like meat. But the new age products, they're the ones that are like really like a sausage, that even got skins on like sausage and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure about those myself. But those are the ones that are directly targeting meat eaters, you see. But I mean, my view is, I mean, I can't, it's been a long time since I ate meat, but I personally don't think they taste a lot like meat anyway. You know, the corn products is possibly the closest. I think
it's more the texture, isn't it? People want something to chew. I think that's what they miss, that maybe that... I don't know.
I actually really don't know. I think, you know, I think a lot of the time, and I remember this when I first gave up eating meat, you know, what people think is the meat that makes them like a product, it's actually not the meat. It's combinations of things like salt and fat.
Yep.
You know, it's like if you have a burger, you've got a bit of meat or a bit of fake meat in it, but then you've got the mayo, you've got the tomatoes, all that other stuff. That's what makes the burger. So I think it is quite easy to sort of do away with that without missing out on the flavour.
Yeah, I guess
so. The finer points between this vegan burger and that one is relatively sort of small, really.
I mean, I've been swapping in some vegan stuff in the family meals for a little while without anyone really noticing sometimes, which is quite interesting. Like you say, with burgers and things, you know. But I mean, what should we have in our store cupboards? What should we, like I say to you, I bought jackfruit because I saw it in a recipe the other day and I'm like, I don't even know what that is. It's a tinned jackfruit. But, you know, there are things that obviously you can have to hand that are handy.
Yeah, I mean, you
sweet
know...
Sweet potatoes? Is that something you can just always fill out a meal with? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what you feel about sweet potatoes, I suppose, really. I mean, I it's funny because you can get all kinds of fake mints now to make... I mean, my children love... they call it sketinaise, when they've obviously been bought. They've been bought out of my vegetarian, my children. So, you know, things like that that... I mean, I you can buy the frozen stuff... You can buy the stuff from the chiller, but I mean, I actually use the dried stuff. So you got it's really old school, actually. It's been around since I've been vegetarian, but it's basically soya mince and it's dried and you reconstitute it with water and then you use it in like with the tomato sauce and everything else. But I still find that that's the best product of all, really, and my children like it the most. But you know, things like Marmite, what you got to remember with vegan food is that. A lot of meat products and dairy and stuff, it's kind of, you've got to replicate the flavour, and there's this kind of umami flavour, and umami is what makes something taste delicious. And if you take out a lot of the meat and everything else, then and you're left without umami, basically. So you've got to put it back in again. So that's where things like Marmite come in. You've got things like tomato paste, things like olives, that Enjuvita, which is basically yeast flakes. You sprinkle that on everything, it makes it taste delicious. But you've got to kind of be a bit more creative with adding flavour. So, for example, if I make sketinaise, as my children like it, I would put Marmite in it. I'd put tomato paste in it, and then that makes it taste delicious. Soy sauce, that's also high umami. So if you just, like, Google umami flavours, vegetable, and then get yourself stocked up on some of those things. Plant milk as well. I mean, the whole plant milk world has just
exploded.
Absolutely. I mean, my favourite is Oatly Barista. It's oat milk, which is created for baristas making in coffee, which does perform really well for coffee. We use it in the restaurants, but I mean, I also use it for everything else as well. So if you're making a cheese, in inverted commas, sauce, use the Oatly Barista and then use the Enjuvita flakes. Miso is another high umami flavour as well. So if you flavour your things that you want to have a cheesy flavour, if you use a combination of miso and Enjuvita flakes... It does it really well. It tastes really cheesy.
That's interesting. Really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all fascinating. Thank you for coming in and telling us about your experience. It's been good to hear about how well the business is going as well. Good luck with your plans to move in Cambridge and expand in Cambridge as well. I definitely think there's a market out there in Cambridge. You're right. If you can get one in London, definitely one in Cambridge. And maybe plans to expand further out to other places in the future?
Thank you. Yes, definitely.
Is it just you that runs this? But you must have other people that help you
now.
No,
definitely. Yeah, of course, my partner, who's also my husband, he's my kind of business partner as well. He's on operations, on kind of forward motion is how we describe it. But we've got a really fabulous team as well here in Cambridge and also in London.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, I appreciate you coming in short notice and sparing some time. If you missed any of this fascinating conversation, find it. We'll put it up as a podcast on the Cambridge 105 website. Thank you very much, Louise.
Thank you. Cambridge 105 Radio.